ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः नाम श्रेष्ठं मनमपि शचीपुत्रमत्र स्वरूपं रूपं तस्याकृजमुरुपुरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशम् प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितः कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः परकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथन्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवम् श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता शिवशाखान्वितांश्च हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे श्री विष्णु सहस्रनाम 520 अम्भो निधि This name, from 520 to 528, is described by Parashara Bhatta as pertaining to Sri Kurma Avata. And he gives the meaning that he who has the waters as his abode, he lives in the water. So that means water, and nidhi means the reservoir or the ocean or the treasure. So he's the treasure within the water. Sometimes we hear of people going treasure hunting. They're looking for ships that have sunk carrying treasure. It's a wild chase, but if you can find the Kurma avatar in the water, he's the real treasure, if we can find. Searching for that form of the Lord, which is very difficult to understand for the person of the modern age who thinks in terms of everything should be rational, understandable, not mythology. So why would you, as intelligent, educated people, accept that the Supreme Lord is in the form of a tortoise? What's the answer to that one?
You can take any form he wants.
Yeah, it's stated in Shastra, so we accept. What do we know with our tiny little brains? What have we seen? What do we know? Yeah? He can take any form. The tortoise form of the Lord is the prototype of all tortoises. He likes. There's pleasure to be had in that form also. Another meaning. Well, let's go through this one first of all. He supports the Mandara mountain. If you think of who can support a mountain, if you have a big rock put on top of you, you'll get crushed to death. It's one of the things I remember from school, in the primary school. We learned about all the different ways the Protestants in England used to kill the Catholics. One way was by putting big stones on top of them so they got crushed to death. We never heard about what the Catholics did to how they tortured and killed the Protestants. So a big rock will crush someone to death. But Mandara Mountain is huge. But for him, it's just something just for Just like in the Shastra it said that during a Vedic Yajna, the Yajaman who's initiated for the Yajna, the one who sponsors the sacrifice with the idea of getting benefit from it, he may scratch himself if he feels itchy. He shouldn't scratch himself because that contaminates him for the yajna. You're not supposed to do that. All kinds of, once you're initiated for a yajna, you're not supposed to have sex or do anything unclean. It may go on for some. So he can scratch himself with a buffalo horn. Stated in Shastra. So he doesn't become impure. So buffalo horn is something light. So for the Kurma avatar, the Mandara mountain is something light. Ah, that's nice. Whereas for anyone else, it's just unimaginably light. They just get completely crushed. So he's a tortoise, but he's not the tortoise that you've see. You probably don't see them much in Tamil Nadu, tortoises. Do they wander around in the jungle? Turtles at the beach, is it?
Yeah.
Freshwater turtles also?
In the zoo.
Only in the zoo. Huh? You don't get freshwater?
Maybe they might have been in the rivers, but most of the rivers are drying up.
Yeah, right, there's no rivers. Go and have a riot in Bangalore about that. They're pathetic little creatures. Oh, some of them, they're very big. Have you seen the turtles in Radhakund or in the Yamuna? They're quite big. They can bite you, and if they bite you, they can take a big hunk of flesh out of your body. They're quite big and dangerous. It's sharp teeth. But anyway, Kurma avatar is much, much bigger. Otherwise, it's a very low form of life, the turtle. Not this turtle. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay. He who is in the form of the ocean. So, in other words, the ocean is a form of he. Sarasam asmi sagaraha, Krishna says in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The Vibhuti Yoga section. If you see anything great, you can think that's a manifestation of me. So the ocean, among bodies of water, he's the ocean. Yesterday, when discussing Amita Vikrama, he is of unlimited prowess, I was discussing all the different manifestations of the material world, which we may see as very powerful and awe-inspiring. So the ocean is one of them. The awe-inspiring, if you see the ocean, oh, it's so big. Of course, if you live next to the ocean, you don't think anything of it. But if you see it for the first time, say if you're living inland, and you see the ocean for the first time, it's quite an experience. Huh? Did you? You were brought up where? First, you remember when you first saw? You were 5 years old in Houston, so you wouldn't have remembered, because that's on this. Is it? What's it like? I never saw the coastline at Houston. It's an inlet, is it?
Houston is a little inside. The coastal town is called Galveston.
Uh huh. I don't remember when I first saw the sea. You went there and see through the huge, vast expanse. You can't imagine. Can you remember when you first saw the ocean?
Kuwait.
Abko, Pahilaba, Juhu, Bombay, Iskon Mandir, Iskon ko, Jurihona ke Pahile, Waharat, oh, acha. Yeah, there must be maybe half the world's population never saw the ocean.
Go throw that in the ocean.
What a condemned species. The dog is just always barking. So fortunate to have a human birth. You know, dog verse. What? How condemned can you be? So, the ocean. It's orange spray. You can't imagine unless you've seen it. There's the story of Dr. Frog, Kupamandukanai. The frog in the well cannot imagine how great is the ocean. If we see the ocean, oh, something. But then, how great is Krishna? From whom come millions of oceans, and he maintains them all. So when we see the ocean, we can think, oh, that's Krishna. Ambho Nidhi. He is the ocean. He is the great receptacle of water. That's Krishna. The ocean, of course, comes up in the pastime, particularly, well, in the pastimes of Lord Rama comes up. Krishna also entered the ocean. Can you remember when? Yeah, I just heard that today. Maybe you heard it also. Is it? When he was studying at Avantipur, and his guru said, hey, Fadakshina, bring back my dead son. So he went in the ocean, killed the Panchajana demon, got his conch. So, but that's also his mercy, that he entered the ocean, because he goes to so many places in his pastimes for different reasons, and in this way gives his mercy to living beings in different parts of the universe. Went to Varuna Loka, went right above the coverings of the universe to see Mahavishnu, way, way beyond all the universes. So he goes to all different places. Went to Navadvip, Mithila, Kashi, to Vidarbha. So many places Krishna goes, apart from his regular course of travel between the Mathura, Hastinapur area and the Dwarka area. That's his general course. He went to Pandarapur, so many places he went to. So in this way he gave his mercy by visiting different places. So we see the ocean, yeah, we can remember Krishna's pastimes. And there are so many pastimes. All the great holy rivers flow into the sea. Well, on the eastern side they flow into the Mahodadhi, which is coming up as one of the names of Krishna, and on the western side to Ratnaka, they're different seas. So the sea is a holy place. Agastya swallowed the ocean on the western side. Yeah, well, the point is that by discussing all these things, studying Shastra, when we see the ocean, we don't just think, oh, that's nice, let's stand on the beach and take a photo and put it on Facebook or whatever. But we see the connection with Krishna everywhere. Ambho Nidhi. Krishna is the sea. So, another meaning. Krishna sustains all the ambhas. He's the receptacle, the reservoir, which means the substratum, the basis of all the ambhas. So in the Shastra, you see the commentators on this, they've done very deep Shastric research to bring out different meanings. So there's a definition given in the Taittiriya Brahmana. The word ambha can also mean the different levels of human-like persons, namely the devas, the asuras, the manusha, the people of this world, and the pitaras, the pitris. So in other words, he is the abode or the resting place of all the humans, the asuras, the demigods, and the pitris, all those in human life form. Of course, he's the basis of everything, but especially this name is mentioned because this form of life is very important. Not the dog, or the tortoise, or the fish in the ocean, but the human form of life is very important. The human, especially human in this world, even in the higher planets, the demigods, they already have so much punya to be there, but they can make more punya also. You'll find Indra sometimes performs a horse sacrifice. Well, it's mostly to get himself freed of sinful reaction. Or he can commit sins and fall from that situation. A demon can act in a pious way and be elevated. A demon can also become a devotee. So that's also considered an extension of the human form, but especially on this planet, because this human form of life is very valuable. But anywhere, in any situation, it's possible to act in Krishna consciousness, which is it's probably not possible for non-human type species, because the consciousness is not simply sufficiently developed. So the Vishnu, he is particularly the looking over this human form of life, and he interacts, of course, with lower species of life also, but particularly the pastimes of Krishna are with those in human life forms. Krishna, the cows, the deer, the trees, he loves all living beings, but you could say his more active interactions are with humans and human-like beings, such as particularly in his pastimes, the demigods. Another meaning, he's the basis of all water. One of the interpreters has given this, Satyadeva Vashishta. So, and then he discusses the importance of water, how water is life. Apam re tamsi jinvati, from Atharva Veda. So, without water we can't live. Water is, if water goes, then everything dries up. The Saraswati River previously flowed in northwestern India, now it dried up, and then all the civilization on the banks of the river is gone. When the water goes, then everything, there's no life. The blood running in our veins, that's also predicated on water. So, see water, think of Krishna. Rasoham apsu kantiya. Krishna is the taste of water, but he's also the reservoir of all water. He makes this amazing arrangement by which the water is preserved with salt as the ocean, and then is evaporated, and then comes down. You may think that previously people didn't know all this science, but obviously they did, because we have this very song. This Sangsara Dava Nalalidha Loka Tranaya Karanya Ghanaganatvam Praptasya Kalyana Gunanavasya Vandegaro Shri Charna Arvindam. That's an analogy given. That just as the water is evaporated from the ocean and spread out everywhere, so in the same way the ocean of mercy is Krishna, and the Guru is like the cloud that accepts some of that mercy in the form of water and spreads that out everywhere. So and we'll find in ancient Shastra the description how the sun evaporates the water for 8 months a year. And it's right there in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, the autumn, description of autumn, how the sun evaporates for 8 months the water and then distributes it for 4 months. So that was known in Vedic science also. So see water, think of Krishna. See the ocean, think of Krishna. See a tortoise, think of Krishna. See anything, think of Krishna. That's by discussing Krishna. You mean, why are we discussing so many different detailed names? But Well, why not see Krishna in everything? Everywhere, in everything. Hare Krishna. Yeah, question?
Can you please explain why people in the past, especially saints, considered traveling across the ocean as taboo?
Why was traveling across the ocean considered taboo previously? Well, because it's uncivilized people. One shouldn't go to a place where there's no Vedic culture. And people, if they're living in such a sinful way of life, then you'll lose your culture. Merchants used to go from to Arabia and Greece on the western side, and to Indonesia, and the Buddhist monks, they went from China to India by ship. But especially for the point of Brahmins, they weren't supposed to go. They're supposed to stay here in India. For fulfilling the purpose of human life, this land is the best. Otherwise, like I said, they used to go. The Sindhi Bhatiyas, they went from Sindh up as far as what's that place in the Volga Delta? Astrakhan. In Russia, there are pictures from a few hundred years ago of worship of Srinathji in Russia. The Sindhi Bhatiyas, they went all over the Gulf to Bahrain, Muscat, Dubai, all these places, and did, because it's just a short distance for them. Just across the water from Sindh. So they used to go. Iran was under Vedic culture, but further west, since the time of Yayati went to then there came the Turks and the Greeks, they became the Shakas and the Mlechas and Yavanas. So they're all uncivilized people. Chaitanya Charitamrita states, Paschima Lok Shabmura Anacha. What people on the western side are all fools and uncivilized, uncultured. In that context, it means the western side of India, particularly Mathura area. But Prabhupada states in the purport of that verse that the further west you go in the world, the less civilized people are. That's according to the Vedic standard.
My parents used to say that Narayan is in the ocean, so sannyasis are not supposed to cross the ocean. Because
Narayan is in the ocean, so sannyasis shouldn't cross the ocean. But Narayan is everywhere. That's also when crossing sacred rivers by boat, you shouldn't spit in it or urinate or any such thing. You eat food, you're not supposed to throw your remnants in the river. So for the ocean, it would be a bit difficult if you have to go days and days and days. That's maybe a consideration also. But then what do you do in Vrindavan? If you live in Vrindavan, you shouldn't pass stool and urine in the sacred dust of Vrindavan. So what are you going to do? You can do it in a pan and hire some bungi to take it out. Not a bridge busi bungi. You have to bring someone from outside. But as soon as he comes in Brajamandal, he becomes purified. Then what are you going to do? Then you have to adjust to live there. You have to be practical. Nowadays you can't say the word bhangi, right? you say that, they'll put you in prison. Is it? You can say OBC, something like that. Anyway, we'll make the bhangis into brahmanas, because the brahmanas, anyway, they became like bhangis. So, well, still most of them are vegetarians in South India. The point, our own Baladev Vidyabhushan gives us Ambo Nidhimi, he says, the Garbhodak Ocean emanated from him. So, from his perspiration. Okay, there's another point. Okay, Hare Krishna.